Today's Daily DVR is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. Go to Cufflinks.com/DVR today. Use code DVR20 and save 20% off all the time, baby. Also, Force Friday, baby. Force Friday sale, 20% off Star Wars. And Cufflinks.com is launching some new Episode 9 products. Use code FORCE20, October 3rd through the 7th. Code FORCE20. That's right, baby. Also, 20% off DC Comics for all October. 20% off. Use DC Comics 20 and get 20% off DC Comics. DC Comics, Star Wars, NFL, NBA. Come on, Game of Thrones, cufflinks.com has it all. Look good, feel good. When you step outside in the morning, elevate your style. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR today. And also, give us a review. Give us a written review on Apple Podcasts, and you'll be entered to win a Darth Vader Star Wars lightsaber tie. cufflinks.com/DVR, baby. Go there. Today is Monday, September 13th, 2019, and this is Daily DVR. Welcome back, everyone. It's been quite a while since I sat down and just chatted into the old microphone by myself, but today we're going to do our fall TV reviews. First week is done. A lot of the networks released their new shows. And quite honestly, these are the least exciting things available to us, but I'm going to talk about them because some of them actually turned out to be halfway decent, decent enough to give them a shot. And that's kind of my precursor. It's kind of a sucky thing to start off a podcast and say, hey, I'm not really excited about these shows, but I'm going to talk about them for like an hour. But I want to be honest with you, and it's obvious that the networks are catering to a mass audience, and they feel that because they are, I mean, everybody is actually, but because they are this, everyone has the networks, which statistics show is not true. The networks do not, their audiences do not outflank cables so dramatically. I mean, just think about your daily life. Is with cord cutting now, what's the difference? Do you have people not paying for cable on purpose and then people who don't have cable because they either can't afford it or it's not available to them? What's the difference? They don't have cable. But the networks continue to go for these wider shows. Now they've proven again and again that it's the live shows and the kind of more interactive shows, Masked Singer, I'm going to talk about that a little bit. Sports, NFL is the top rated TV show on anything, right? A lot of people it's just like people forget that video games make like three times as much as films, but everybody talks about what movie was the big movie that weekend when the money numbers are different. I didn't even talk about porn. We're not going to get into that. That's a different show. But the networks continue to have this broad kind of idea, though it is the live aspect that does them the best. So I kind of see it's different this year. I have a different attitude, and my attitude is that these are shows that could possibly be interesting to you when they end up on streaming. So I'm not going to tell you watch Stumptown every week. Why would you do that? Why would you watch Stumptown for 22 weeks in a row? It's not that good. I can't tell you to do that. I can't tell you to watch Prodigal Son every week. Because guess what? There's going to be 22 episodes of it. And a good 25 to 50% of it is going to be just hanging out with characters in extreme situations that probably are not really written that well because the people writing it are just churning through plot. They're not really interested in pushing forward an idea or a character. They're trying to create an episode of television. It's an exercise in form. If that's what excites you about television and film, that's cool. That does not excite me. Sorry. I'm not trying to be negative, but I want to be realistic, right? I want to be realistic towards what these new shows really are. And for me, the networks are streaming incubators now. And of course, it used to be the other way around, but that's life. Everything flips. You got to flip it, just like Seinfeld said, right? That's how they made Seinfeld. They said, we're going to flip it. So we're going to flip it. And these are shows that when they end up on streaming, do you want to check them out? Is it something that you could put on and run through 10 of them while you're doing laundry or while, you and your wife are doing the taxes or whatever? You know what I'm saying? Like, while you're building Gundam like me or, you know, cleaning or doing whatever. What is television for you? And there's a difference, I think, between when I may review some other shows that are on the streaming or some of the network shows or cable shows that are less than 15 episodes a season or closer to 10 to 12, which I think is still long. I think we're maybe getting towards the 6 to 7. I think a show like Mindhunter is a good example of how we're reviewing Mindhunter, Heath Solo and I, and you can subscribe to that as well as just keep subscribed to Daily DVR because you get everything here. This is the master feed. But one of the things we noticed in Mindhunter is that it's really only 7 episodes. And they kind of, there's 2 episodes in the middle that are about a half hour each, and they just wanted to stretch it. And that kind of speaks to finding a natural rhythm for visual storytelling. It's just like films, right? How long films went through a thing where in the 70s, 60s and 70s, films ballooned. They were 2-3 hours long, right? Whereas previously they had been even shorter. Originally films were less than an hour, right? Then they became about an hour and a half standard. 60s, 70s, a little earlier, okay, went to 2 hours or over. The epics always maintained. That used to be called an epic. That's where that came from. It's epic in scope, but as well as length. So just look back. Film history is not that long. You don't got to do that much research to get it down. You're really going back to like the 30s. It's not that long, right? It's less than 100 years. You can read that in an afternoon on Wikipedia. But the point is that films now are back to this epic proportion. Look at these films are 2 hours long, 2.5 hours long. When's the last time someone said to you, what did you think of that movie? Oh, man, it was just too short. What do you mean? Oh, it was only, you know, I wish it had been longer. Which movie are you talking about? Any movie, because they're all like 3 hours long. No, nobody says that. They're all super long. And it took me a while to understand why that was. I had to do some research. And basically what it came down to is that it was about 10 years ago or so. I got to find this article. That there were studies done that people were not going to the film, going to a movie because they felt like it had to be longer. It had to be an experience. So they've been pushing these longer films. I always felt, why aren't movie theaters running like restaurants? You got to flip the table. You got to flip the room, right? Why would you want a 2.5 hour film that you can only run 4 or 5 times a day when you could have an hour and a half film that you could run 7 to 8 times a day? That's so much more money. But it's because they felt people were going to the films less and they're so reliant on that first opening weekend to establish to all of their investors, basically, right? Because if you think about it, a film is an IPO. That's what it is. They launch an IPO on a Friday, and if it bombs, they pull it. If it does good, they keep it a little while, and then they try to rack up some money that they can then push towards the marketing of the home video or what have you. And then they steal all the money in the background anyway, and except the big actors like Heath Snowlow get paid the billions. But long story short, what I'm trying to say is that it seems as though these business and culture aspects, when they come together, are cyclical, right? So the networks were At first, of course, the place where the greatest shows were. Then the streaming comes along, and they're all having to siphon off the networks to establish that they even are legitimate. Now it's the other way around to me. The same way that films are 2.5 hours long standard, now the networks really are just which one of these shows can I look at now, kind of ignore, and then maybe remember to watch again on streaming? Or will they get that second life, right? It's almost as if the corollary to film, the networks are the theaters, and streaming is streaming. It remains itself. It's like pure content now. It's the purest of all content. You want to watch something, you watch it. Everything else is more complicated. You got to go to the theater. You got to tune in at a certain time on ABC and watch commercials, or DVR it and fast forward through them, right? When all you really want to do is just say into, you know, your little remote control, emergence, and then the episode is playing in front of you. So when that can happen to a bunch of these shows in, I was going to say 6 to 8 months, because it's probably going to be sooner than that for a lot of these. You watch it on Hulu, let it rack up. But I'm going to give a little review, but that's kind of how I see the networks. That's my long-winded intro to the cyclical nature of film and television, and how you got to kind of keep up with it, but things switch, right? It's like political parties when people say the Democrats did this, and you're like, well, actually, that was a Republican. They just called themselves something different, and it's in different countries. You notice that too when you say, hey, I want to, what's going on in that country? And then you start reading, you say, oh, this party called this. You think it's this party, but actually, it's the other party. So, though the fall TV thing has historically been, look at these great new shows that you will now watch, get into, and pay attention to, I almost feel as if we are the arbitrator. We're the arbiters. We always were. But even more so in this sense, you create your own network, right? That's kind of the idea behind Daily DVR, right? We all create our own networks. What you watch is your TV channel. And these are some shows that you might be interested in. I'm going to start off with a show that's been on for a while, but my son Lachlan has got us into watching it because he heard about it from some of his friends at school this year. And it is The Masked Singer. Everybody knows what The Masked Singer is. You've probably seen it. It's a bunch of celebrities wearing outrageous costumes, singing songs, while other, I don't know, are they really celebrities? The judges, people that you kind of heard of on TV before, and Jenny McCarthy, who is something, I don't know what she is at exactly anymore, but and Ken Jeong and Robin Thicke and Nicole Schwarzenegger, who I think is popular only because she was on one of these shows. I have no idea. This is the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life. It's so interesting, and I wanted to talk about it really for only one reason. It's a YouTube show. I know that it has its roots. I think it was either a Korean or Japanese show originally. So there's a whole other cultural aspect to it as far as television goes in those markets that I'm not an expert enough or know enough about to get into, only that I know that those types of loud, bright, fast, high energy shows are very popular there. And this is even more high energy. You know, it's like walking into a carnival or something, right? It really is a sideshow. That's what I was saying to my wife. I was like, this is not really what we're used to. This is like you're walking into a carnival or something just crazy and insane. It's always self-referential. Every 2 minutes, they tell you you're watching the best thing ever. Someone comes out in a costume and Jenny McCarthy goes, oh my God, how did they make that costume? That is the most amazing costume I've ever seen in my entire life, guys. And yet they just showed you 2 seconds ago that some underpaid artists who look like they haven't slept in days made these costumes behind the scenes. And it took them a couple weeks, but you know, I'd rather see them making the costumes actually. That would be, if they had a spinoff show, a reality spinoff show where they competed to make costumes for the Masked Singer, I would watch that more than I would watch the Masked Singer. But that YouTube part of it, it's highly emotional and confessional. Everybody has some confession. Every time somebody, all the singers are like, I was really shy or I had so many problems. I'm doing this weird voice because they do the computer voice every time. So it's so strangely over-emotional, self-indulgent, and self-referential. And it's just like YouTube. It's like any YouTube thing you watch where the guys make pancakes and they have threaded eyebrows, which was my son. Like, this is what like caused me to ban YouTube in my house. Now, this is something that I understood just a little bit from doing a little bit of the YouTube and looking around at what other people did, and also as a parent watching YouTube, are those three aspects. Always self-referential. Everything you talk about is within the realm of that world. So when they talk about the Masked Singer, anything they mention on that show is in reference to the show. If they talk about, oh, they'd be great on the show, reminding you again and again of what you're watching and how amazing it is. At least 3 times a minute when someone's not singing, they say, this show is incredible. Holy cow. I can't believe I'm a part of this. This is amazing. Right? And the over-emotional. Right? Everything is a personal story, personal connection, like total TMI time. They're really getting deep. And the people too, right? They have to craft their own personalities. It's just the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life. I'm trying to figure out if this is actually like a good thing for a child to watch, what it does to the brain. But I think it's actually kind of fun, and I can only watch like 10 minutes of it at a time. So that's an old review, which is The Masked Singer. Now I'm going to dive into the fall TV reviews. I got them up here. What I did is on our Facebook page, which is Daily DVR, just look up Daily DVR on Facebook and join the Facebook page. I've been doing little reviews also to remind myself so I can go back, but I do that all the time. We have a very active Facebook page. So if you're a listener to any of our podcasts and this one, give it a listen. So I'm going to start off with Prodigal Son. This stars Tom Payne and Michael Sheen. It's on Fox Mondays at, I believe, 9 p.m., and my wife and I watched the first episode. This is a serial killer show, okay? So there is a detective he's an FBI agent. We find out that his father was called the Surgeon, one of the most famous serial killers ever. And in fact, he was the one who reported him. I'm going to do some spoilers here. Not that it really matters, because I think that these shows, the pilot, more often than not, they show you everything in the commercial. they do like a flashback in the first 5 minutes that explains everything to you. So Tom Payne is the son. Michael Sheen, the great Michael Sheen, what a tremendous actor. Right off the bat, I'll tell you, he is the only reason to watch this show. This is a standard, I would call it a standard new era procedural, which means that it pushes the boundaries on violence and on the likability of its star. And there's been a bunch of these. Elementary, there's a bunch of the kind of new era procedurals that kind of push this. Some have been on CBS. Mostly it's actually CBS and Fox that have done these kind of shows. And I think that this kind of fits the bill. It's not bad. It's got some interesting acting. Tom Payne is your lead, and he's like his father. He does seem to have some tendencies towards violence, and he's on different types of medication and is having flashbacks. So it's, you know, it's your typical gray lead that we have in this new era of TV in general, right? The anti-hero. It establishes an interesting idea going forward, which is that Tom Payne will not speak to Michael Sheen because he's a serial killer and he hates him for what he did to his childhood and blah, blah, blah. But Michael Sheen desperately wants his son to speak to him, but he now has to speak to him because someone is copying his father's murders. And Michael Sheen claims it's not I who is doing it, but is it? And we will go throughout the season, I believe, where pages of his diary have been stolen. And it will be again and again 22 episodes of someone copying the father's murders while the son goes to the father to get information, Hannibal Lecter style. And then do we find out in the end, Blacklist style, it was him. He was hiring people to do it. Or no, it wasn't him. He has another son. That he secretly had a family, right? So, Prodigal Son. I would give a review of, if you're into serial killers and you like the kind of action genre, I will say that the action scenes were pretty decent. Now, this is the pilot. They usually put more money into the action scenes in a pilot. They were not outstanding. The writing was average writing. Kind of funny, a little bit interesting. The plotting I found to be kind of interesting. They did a good job of winding in the background story as well as what, you know, how the procedure was going to go moving forward. They did a decent job of that. Michael Sheen will not be, I don't believe that he's going to be a huge part of this show. Perhaps he will. I'm not sure. He was in, I would say, about a quarter of the episode. And moving forward, perhaps that depends on what other, you know, if he's going to come back and do other Amazon show, whatever shows he's in, films. He's obviously in-demand actor. And he was able to do a lot while he was still on Masters of Sex. And a lot of people forget he did that whole series. And he was still able to appear in a lot of things. It's a little bit different when you're doing a network show, but with shooting schedules as they are, he could probably drop in and shoot like 7 episodes rather quickly because all of his scenes take place within the confines of a jail, right? He's a serial killer that he's in jail. So that's not too hard to shoot. All in all, I'd say, if this is what I said on Facebook. If it was a 10-episode streamer, we'd be 3 deep by now. I'd finish this season. But at 22 to 24 episodes, I can't see myself watching anymore. My wife said she's interested in it. Maybe we end up watching another episode. When it gets to streaming, that's when I might check it out. And in general, the networks would behoove themselves to stop doing this and just do a fall season and a winter season, each season of 10 episodes. But, you know, what am I? I'm just a guy sitting here podcasting to you. Because if this was 10-episode thing, I'd be watching it because I'd figure out that I'd say, okay, great. I'm not going to get half the episodes where it's just kind of like running around because it's not that well written. Right. It's you can tell that they are, again, an exercise in making a pilot episode. So that's my review of Prodigal Son. I would say to Prodigal Son, Prodigal, going to watch you on streaming, but Prodigal not. that wasn't even funny. Stumptown. I live in Stumptown. I live in Portland, and this is a series on ABC that ABC is mercilessly telling you to watch. The commercials were on everything that was on ABC. You know, we watched The Bachelor and Bachelor in Paradise. So that was tons of commercials there. But Stumptown is here. You know what I'll do is actually, why don't I go ahead and read my Facebook? I'll just read it right off. Read it right off there. Stumptown. Ooh, do, do, do. Let's see. How do you do this? I got these things saved in Facebook and I click it and it's just whirling around. What's, is something going wrong with my internet? Yeah, what's going on here? Okay, here we go. Stumptown is a high-quality, lightly serialized episodic action drama. Kobe Smulders, Michael Ealy, and Jake Johnson are great as usual. The previews even show Donal Logue, Terriers, joining the cast. Great cast. Of all these network shows, this is what you see. You get great actors, actresses, directors, writers, people who know what they're doing. And that is a draw, but does it all come together to make something? Let's see. It's got a gritty detective vibe to it, albeit with all the network trappings. This is a fun show, Stumptown. The plot was decent. It's not complex. They use a flashback narrative device in the pilot. You know, we start out, she's trapped in a car fighting with some guys. The car goes up in the air, cut to title, Stumptown. So it's got that kind of 70s, 80s detective, gritty vibe to it. She is a veteran of Afghanistan who's suffering from PTSD that she's not getting help for. She has a background that's kind of cloudy. She was in love with someone who, a Native American guy whose mom owns the local casino. His daughter gets in trouble. He has died. We find out later he died in Afghanistan. She needs to help the daughter. So it's an introduction where she's becoming a private investigator out of necessity. And also it's like everyone around her is kind of telling her, you're good at this, so do it. Jake Johnson is just a friend who owns a bar. She's very sexually adventurous and goes out and is fooling around with these dudes, but not Jake Johnson. You know, she meets Michael Ealy and then they're having sex 10 minutes later. She's owning it, right? Portland style. It's actually a very fun and cool show, and I enjoyed watching it. But there's the network aspect to it. And I have to see the second episode to see how far it gets in. The motivation, they set up everything great, but then the motivation of why the killer bad guy committed the act they did in this particular episode, I won't completely spoil it for you, is very murky. And it's as if that was not really a main concern. It was obvious that the concern was to set up, you know, it's like they say a lot when they get into these writers' rooms, like they got a lot to do this episode. They've got to establish all these characters. They've got to establish this world. The Portland setting was great. They shoot it all in and around downtown Portland. I mean, all 10 blocks of the city of Portland. I have to make a small aside, which is that I love this city and it's absolutely amazing. But having grown up in the absolute labyrinth of New York and New Jersey, Portland is laughably small. I mean, literally, there is a little highway that is almost never has a lot of traffic that you can drive the length of the entire city. You can just drive by it. Hi, there's the whole city. And it takes like 7 to 10, maybe not even that long, maybe 7 minutes. I mean, imagine doing that in Manhattan. You'd be like, how long are you on the West Side Highway? You couldn't do that. You can't just go down a road in Bayonne and be like, oh, hey, look, there's No, it's like, holy cow, there's New York. It's like you look at Portland, you're like, oh, it's a cute little city. That's why it's perfect for a show like this. Why did it take them so long? You can really establish little neighborhoods, and Portland really has a lot of varied architecture and environments, and it has neighborhoods. That's what I love about this city. New York doesn't even have those anymore, right? They just invent them for real estate, right? Niho So, where are you? I'm in Soho Low. I'm in Low Soho between this street and this street, and it's a corner. No, that's not actually a real neighborhood. But Portland has real neighborhoods, and even in the first episode, they do a great job of showing some of it's more in the suburban areas, some of it's more like downtown city. They did a lot of shooting in industrial areas. It's a lot of on-location shooting. So this one I may check out more episode just because it's shot in my city, and I recognized my wife and I were like, oh, I recognize a bunch of places. It's not hard to recognize Portland again. It's not very big. I thought it was fun. It's a fun show. This one I would say I would definitely check out on the streaming. Perhaps we keep it in the DVR. As I said in the beginning, I started off a bit negatively about the networks, but as you can tell, most of these are not scathing reviews. I'm only two in, but this was a fun show. And I think that if you're a fan of procedurals, you're a fan of the detective kind of plotting, Colby Smulders is fantastic. I've always loved her. I think not only is she amazing to watch, she's gorgeous. She is great. I think she's a very good actor. I don't think she's great. She's a very good actor for television. You know, she does a lot of body acting. She's physical. I think that her face is great. You know, she really reacts. She doesn't mind looking any different way. So her look changes throughout the episode, which I think is kind of cool too. They're not like, you know, like I'm trying, this isn't like Hawaii Five-0 where, you know, when they always look like they just got out of the shower. She doesn't look, they do kind of gritty her up in this. And like, she's like kind of almost like living in her car. Interesting show. I guess I had more to say about Stumptown than I thought, but I dug it. This was maybe the one I liked the most. And especially I have to admit in the back of my mind, Donnell Logue is joining the cast. I love that guy. Terriers. I know he was recently on Gotham. Sons of Anarchy. I just think he's a great actor. I love him back to the Tao of Steve. Taking a little break from me talking to myself and talking to you to remind you to go to cufflinks.com. We're giving away a Darth Vader red Star Wars lightsaber tie. It's awesome. Check it out on our Facebook page. I put it up on there. I put it up on Twitter too. At DVR Podcast. All you got to do is give us an Apple Podcast review. So go to cufflinks.com/DVR, type in Darth Vader tie, and check it out there too. Because guess what? It's Force Friday this week, 20% off Star Wars, and we're launching new Episode 9 products. Use code FORCE20 at cufflinks.com, baby. FORCE20. And all month long, 20% off DC Comics. 20% off. They've got awesome stuff that includes Batman. Yes, I love Batman. DC Comics 20. I just got in some ties. I'm going to be giving out way more ties. I got a Batman tie too. 20% off DC Comics. Use code DC Comics 20. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR today. One of the best parts about podcasting is getting to know the listeners and making new friends. And one of those friends is Andy. You may have heard me mention him before on one of our many podcasts. And Andy and his wife, Claire, are looking to adopt. So if you or anybody you know is considering adoption for their baby, please consider the loving family of Andrew and Claire. They're a home study approved adoptive family of three living on a farm in southern Minnesota with a dog, Barney, and two turtles. They're able to adopt from anywhere in the United States and would love to answer any questions you may have. To learn more about them, check out their Facebook page at Andrew and Claire Adopt or on Instagram at Andrew_and_Claire_Adopt. You can also email them at AndrewandClaireAdopt@gmail.com. So again, if you or anyone you know is considering adoption for their baby, reach out at AndrewandClaireAdopt@gmail.com. Thanks. All right, next up is a very interesting show Very interesting. And I don't know the background to this show, but I'd hazard to guess that this was almost on CBS's streaming platform. And it's The Unicorn with Walton Goggins. I love Walton Goggins. I hear Solo saying that name. Walton Goggins. You know, come on, Justified, The Shield, love him. He's awesome. So basically, he plays a widowed father of two teenage daughters. It's a year later. There's two couples that were friends with he and his wife that encourage him to get out there and start dating. He soon discovers he's a unicorn, right? Which means he is like the perfect magical older man. He's handsome. He has money. He has kids. And he's widowed. He's really looking for love and a nice woman and to settle down. He's not playing the field on the apps or whatever. So he's like a true, what they call it, a unicorn. That's the name of the show. The way this kind of plays out, this is a very strange pilot episode. I would gather that this went through some pretty extensive reshoots for at least the first 15 minutes of the plot of the pilot, because you can tell when there are a lot of quick scenes with a lot of different actors in different places, and some of them actually look like they were on location, that they're not going to do all that for a 2-second check-in with people, or they introduce a new, like there's a bar location that's introduced for like half a second that you can tell it's going to be back, but they cut that scene down. But they get it together. They worked it, but they got it together. And it's only, it's 25 minutes. It's only a half hour little comedy on CBS. But it's not really funny. It's kind of dramatic. It's sweet. It reminded me along the lines of Parenthood or something of that nature. It had a sweet quality to it. It doesn't have the physical comedy or silliness of A Modern Family. So even though it is single camera, no laugh track and all that, it does seem more like a streaming show. I wonder how much it's going to change. And this one, I'm definitely going to keep on watching. This is it. This is going to stay in my DVR without a doubt. And that's because I want to see how this is going to evolve. It's almost as if they did too good a job in the first episode, and I'm waiting to see how they screw it up. Because if they keep it the way it is with the tone, I think that it has the opportunity to actually be a pretty fun and great TV show that would get a lot of critics and other people interested in it, and something really interesting for Walton Goggins. But I just doubt that CBS will allow it to be that way. I could see a lot of the kids, the teenage daughters were fantastic. They weren't annoying. And the rest of the crew, it's Michaela Watkins, who is fantastic comedic actress. Omar Benson Miller from Ballers. Do you remember him from Ballers? He was the guy who did the thing, and he was like a player, and then he became a coach, and now I think he's a GM or won the Super Bowl. I don't remember, but he's funny as hell. Rob Corddry from Ballers. That's two people from Ballers. And Rob Corddry is actually, he can be very snarky and sarcastic, but he can also be very sweet. And in Ballers, he was kind of sarcastic, arrogant guy. But he's really sweet in this. And it just seems like everyone involved in this was enjoying what they were doing. And it was quite shocking at how good this was. And there's a little theme they play with people giving them food, that they keep on eating from the freezer because he's not cooking any. And they play this up, and even the payoff is great and it's sweet. I was kind of blown away by this show. And the more I think about it, and I'm talking about it now, I realize how good it was, and I can't wait to check back in to see if it's any good, but I'm going to give it about an 80 to 90% chance that by the fourth or fifth episode, it is a different show. But I'm hoping I'm wrong, but I think I'm probably going to be right about it. So let's keep that one going. All right, let me keep it moving. What else do I got? Survivor is back. All right. If you have not watched Survivor in the past, jump into Survivor this year. Okay. Just do it. It's season 39. Next year is season 40 when it's going to be all winners and it's going to be an amazing season. So this is a great season to jump back in. You've got, you know, whatever 20, whatever contestants, you never heard of them before, but the two greatest Survivor players ever, Boston Rob, who is the greatest ever, and Sandra, who is kind of tied, but I think Boston Rob's better. Sandra won twice. Boston Rob only won once, but he really won twice because his wife won and he set up that whole season for her to win. So I don't want to take anything away from her, but I will because it's just the truth. And if you watch that season, you know I'm right. Boston Rob won two seasons. So he and Sandra both won two seasons. I get into Survivor. I love Survivor. I've seen every season. I went back. I've seen some of the seasons twice. I think it's one of the greatest television shows that has ever existed because they've stayed true to it. Last season was bad. I would have to say that last season was the worst season of Survivor. The worst. And the person who won did not deserve to win. It was total sham. I could get into another argument. I should do a Survivor podcast. I'm getting heated right now. But this is a great season. Boston Rob and Sandra are mentors, and they go to them, and they learn how to build fire and do this and that. And they're also tricking them. Like, it's really fun. It's a great show. If you haven't tried Survivor before, try it this year. Trust me. Just watch it. It's great. It doesn't have a million bazillion episodes. There's like, 12 or 13 episodes of it. I think maybe even less. And it'll be done by Christmas. So watch Survivor. Just listen to me for once in your damn life, okay? Next up, Evil. All right. Okie dokie. Now we go to the bad. This was not good. I'm going to just start telling you right from the beginning. This is my review. This is a somewhat interesting mystery drama centering on a woman who somehow has four children, lives under a bridge, and whose husband is never around because he guides people up Mount Everest. Basically, horrible parents. Her job is to assess killers for the DA, but this one killer throws her for a loop. Why? Because he acts possessed for like 2 seconds and then she believes him. She quits her job. She refuses to say that he's insane because she thinks he might be possessed. She joins with some guy who says he's from the Catholic Church. She doesn't even seem to look into it, but she needs a job because she lives under a bridge and her husband is off pushing people up Mount Everest. He's a Sherpa. What the heck? This is the stupidest show I've ever seen in my life. It made no sense. It's from the people who did The Good Wife. Okay, look. I know that The Good Wife is a good show. So many people love this show and The Good Fight. But I watched their other show too. It was a satire about politicians being zombies, and it only ran for, I believe, a season. I think they may have run a little bit more of it on CBS All Access, but that was actually kind of decent. It was interesting, right? This, I don't know what they're going for in this episode. And again, this may have been reworked. It didn't look that way to me though. I didn't see a lot of stray scenes that you can tell when something has been abandoned. So if they did rework it, they just chucked half the pilot. But I have to admit, I'm not into hauntings and evil and stuff like that. That's just not my thing. It doesn't interest me. This was kind of scary. It had a sleep paralysis angle and there was a guy in a costume and he spoke to her. It was like a creepy creature. That was kind of cool. And Michael Emerson pops up in the end and I think is basically playing Satan. They're trying to set something up here, but I guess I should trust it because they have done, it's a husband and wife team, and they have done television for a very long time, and they know what they're doing. So the weirdness is, I should trust, and now I'm second guessing myself, but I don't know. My wife wants to keep on watching this show. I'm going to watch. As you can tell, there's a pattern here. I guess I'll watch it another episode to see what this becomes, because it was so awful at certain parts that I didn't quite, I mean, I guess, was I supposed to laugh? Or like, she's got like four kids. I guess her mom lives with her. They literally live under a bridge. And is this like supposed to be of like a fairy tale in a way, right? The lady under the bridge, like, you know, her husband, she says, where's daddy? You know, he's guiding people up Mount Everest. Where do you get a job? Where do you get the idea that that's someone's job? Now I'm starting to, I'm talking myself into this thing. Anyway, if you have time, check out the pilot, because it's so absurd. And the way that she just, like, the guy acts crazy and starts gibbering, like, jumps across a table at her and goes, goobity-goobity-goo. And all of a sudden she's like, yes, ghosts exist. She's like, I don't believe in any of that stuff. And then he just acts crazy for 2 seconds. Yes, it's all true. And I just, it's very weird. And then the Michael Emerson thing, he gets a job. He takes her job. He doesn't just appear. He gets hired by the state to be the new expert, right, for all the cases. And they don't do any research into him. And then she does some research and she approaches the DA and she goes, do you know who he really is? And he goes, oh my God, I'm shocked. I couldn't tell whether I was supposed to take it seriously or not. That's what sometimes gets me with these network shows. It's been so long since I watched them. I just can't let go of the disbelief that far that I'm not sure whether I'm being a little bit elitist, TV elitist, or is this show ridiculous? And it's supposed to be, and they're telling a modern kind of folk story. It's just, I don't get it. And then there's, of course, the religious aspects of it where the guy's like, I'm from the Catholic Church. And then the other guy who he's working with is like, I used to clean the rectory and he hired me. I don't know. I could just keep on. This is turning into a comedy routine. Evil. Not good. I don't think it's good. I'm going to say no, but who knows? Maybe it's actually good. All right, here comes, speaking of overworked pilots, wow. But somehow, Bradley Whitford, perfect harmony on NBC. Bradley Whitford plays an angry, arrogant ex-Princeton music professor who buries his wife in Kentucky, her hometown, and then he gets stuck there. He wants to kill himself, and he hears a choir singing terribly. He runs in, interrupts them. You can't sing like this. Oh, who are you? They Google him right there, which is kind of funny, actually. And they're like, you're an ex-Princeton professor. You got fired, but you're a choir. Oh, yes. And then glee style. They are going into the big choir competition against the big mega church. And guess what? The big mega church was actually originally a church that his wife went to, and they wouldn't let him bury her there. So he hates them. So he coaches them. And by the end of the episode, they're somehow at the competition already. They burn through like a whole season of him getting to know them. Unless there was a thing where they said it's in a week and I didn't hear them in the beginning because the thing's only 20 minutes long and they're shouting half the time. Though it is kind of funny. And by the end of it, you know, they don't win, but they get the best new choir and he decides to stay. And he's now living in a houseboat that he has, and these shows are ridiculous. You really have to, I'm cracking myself up today. You really have to give them, you got to give them some rope here. And in this case, they don't hang themselves. They somehow tie this rope into a little community. You like how I did that? And that's what this show reminded me of. It reminded me of a community, a Parks and Rec. It was sweet. The cast was great. You recognize them. By the end of the show, Long Dong Silver from 16 Candles is somehow up on stage with them. They added him to the cast, but I guess they cut that scene. He's now in the cast. There's like three other people that are in the cast at the end. You see, you're like, wait a second. How much did they shoot of this? I think that this was like the third episode and they got to it and they're like, come on. The point is that he gets the choir, just give it to him. And so by the second episode, he knows them all and they can be doing their in jokes and, you know, it's kind of like, let's get past the first season of Parks and Rec and just burn it off in one episode and get to the point where they're friends. And I think that's kind of what they've done in this. But the cast, Bradley Whitford, and the really funny jokes, this is very funny. This is by far the funniest thing we watched. It actually is just good comedy writing and timing. And the supporting actors are really fantastic. One of you would recognize them all from other little bits on shows, but I guess besides Bradley Whitford, the co-star is the girl from, she was on Glee for how many ever years. And of course they're all singing and there's going to be a musical number and they do a mashup, of course. And it's got the gospel tinged into it. So it gets everybody up and it feels good and it sounds great. Overall, I would probably keep this in the DVR, but probably going to build up and at some point I'll give up and then I'll remember when it hits some streaming service and I'll watch it then. Bradley Whitford is fantastic. He's crotchety and kind of mean and un-PC and blah, blah, blah. And it's a fun show. Reminded me of Community, but a very weird pilot. Very, very weird pilot. They burned through it on that one. Quick one, Sunnyside with Cal Penn. Cal Penn is a disgraced New York City councilman from Queens. Hence the name Sunnyside, Queens. We meet him on the day he is kind of kicked out of office. He's been involved in all these controversies. So he does, what is the thing called on the internet where, you know, you can hire anyone to take a selfie with you or leave a voicemail message or do whatever. Or hey, like my friend did, Jamie did for Podcast Winterfell, get them to read anything. And so he does that and he's getting all these selfies taken and people are doing silly things with him. And then unbeknownst to him, he gets hired by a group who think that because he's a councilman, he can train them to become U.S. citizens. They're taking the U.S. citizen test. So this show becomes a kind of interesting political metaphor, obviously, for what's going on in our country. It's got a very pro-immigration, positive storyline where you're getting to know these people. And it's interesting the way they make them, they're all different, right? One guy is just some dude from Queens who found out that his mom immigrated illegally and he's not actually a citizen. Then there's this Asian brother and sister who are super rich, but for some reason didn't file the papers. And then there's another woman who is Hispanic and of course works a million jobs. So they fit in the stereotypes and things like that to try to make a statement on the varied backgrounds that people have. And not judging the backgrounds, but just the situation. They're all equal in their situation. So I thought that was interesting. One of them gets detained by ICE, and that makes Cal Penn kind of turn and decide to help them. And the rest of the show is going to be him, you know, in their various adventures, trying to help them. Good cast. Again, it's NBC, so it's got that kind of vibe where they're trying to make a Friends cast, right? funny cast, not soup. Some of them, the Asian brother and sister are little, you know, the comedy gets stale after a little while. There's a guy who's a cab driver. He's very funny. The Hispanic woman is very, she's probably the best of all of them. She's, every time they check in with her, she's making you laugh. Cal Penn and his sister on the show, the scenes with them are interesting and they seem to work really well together. The sister is great. And I kind of wish that she was the star of the show and he was the annoying brother, like Dr. Brother, the way they set it up, because she is, I think, a bit funnier than him. And the guy who finds out that he's an immigrant and didn't know it is pretty funny too. So an interesting cast, positive messages. But overall it was herky jerky. I don't know. Cal Penn is not that, his tone is a little weird. I don't know that he's that funny. I thought it was kind of interesting that he was like the weakest part of the show for me. I was like, I would say, I was hoping that this would have been great if the Hispanic woman was the lead. She was great, but I don't know how they could do that. He's the councilman, you know, I don't know how they could do it now. I mean, kind of switch the show around. This is maybe something where he needs to carry this show, right? And can he carry this show? And I don't know that he can. This is, he's not Bradley Whitford. So we'll see. We'll see. But all in all, an interesting, I like NBC Superstore. These diverse comedies, I think, are really cool. And I like this show for what it represents. And I think that, I think anybody could watch it, right? Because you see the way it's almost cleverly written, the way they show the different ways people can immigrate to the United States. And depending on your political spectrum, you may say, oh, I agree with this one, but not this one, but this one, right? But, oh, that's funny. And Cal Penn is kind of like, he doesn't really have much of a moral center, as we see from the beginning of the show. And he seems to get it, but still, is he really going to help them? You know, all in all, they put a lot into this. They put a lot into this. And I don't know. I don't know. I probably will not check back in with it because I just didn't think it was that funny and I don't think it worked that well. But we'll see. They could, maybe they could turn it into something better than it is. Let's see. What did I do? Evil, Unicorn, Sunnyside, Perfect Harmony, Stumptown, Emergence. All right. Now, this was the big Lost. Oh, Emergence, it's coming. What the hell is this show? Alison Tolman, who was great on Fargo. Then they put her on another. She was on another show last year. Wasn't so good. On another show before that. Wasn't so good. This show is terrible. I'm not even going to spend a lot of time on this show because I ain't watching this again. This is garbage time, man. This is not good. This is not good. A plane crashes. She's a sheriff in a small town. It's on Long Island. So maybe DJ Tim Hines. It crashed over in his park. And there's a kid. And is the kid an alien? The kid has special powers. The kid turns her car off and on, but she doesn't even notice. She's hiding a kid and she's a sheriff. And then people are running after him. And it's Midnight Special written by fourth graders. It's really bad. She's a great actress, but she gets stuck in another crap. She's just not good at choosing roles because this is a really bad show. I would be surprised if this lasts 6 episodes. That's all I have to say about Emergence. I'm not even going to get into it. I know I'm a sci-fi head. I know there's sci-fi heads listening who perhaps enjoyed this show or are going to give it more time. I will not be one of them. This is garbage. I do not like this show. The leaps of logic, it made no sense. She's the sheriff, but at some point she's acting like she doesn't even go back to the, you don't get to the police station until like a half hour into the show. She's kind of investigating things haphazardly, like going home and hanging out. And then this happened. Oh, let's go. Oh, wait, we think someone's after us. take everyone to my childhood home, even though I'm the sheriff of the town. It makes no sense. It's just for plot contrivances. I mean, I could chalk it up to a pilot, but I can only say that with the history of shows like this in the past, I do not expect good things from Emergence, and thus I will not be watching anymore. It has emerged that it is not a good show. Okay, quick shout out to two shows that are returning, because there's a lot of returning shows. American Horror Story 1984, they're doing slasher, like Friday the 13th. The kids go to the summer camp. Hey, what are you doing this summer? You know, man, I got a job at a summer camp. You want to come? They need counselors. All right, let's do it. And then they go, it's great. I love American Horror Story. Now, about half of the seasons are terrible, and I checked out after a couple episodes, but Ryan Murphy is doing so much stuff now that I think that is benefits him, because he gets to lay out an overall plot and other people work on it and they see it through. Because he's not that good at doing that over, I mean, he can do about a season. That's why he's great at these anthologies. And actually there's another Ryan Murphy show, The Politician, that I'll talk about briefly. But this is fun. And if you have checked out In and Out, I know a lot of people just do certain seasons of American Horror Story. Check this one out, because right from the pilot, you can tell it's a little bit more streamlined. So I don't think it's going to be as insane as some of the other seasons where he's bringing in people from other seasons and you don't remember. I loved Apocalypse because I had seen all the seasons it referenced. And I think that the star of it, who's also the star who played Satan, is kind of the star of this one too. He's great. He's kind of like a singular talent, man. Ryan Murphy really finds these amazing people. But American Horror Story 1984 is very fun. The Politician is the new Ryan Murphy show on Netflix, the first show in his overall deal with Netflix. And it is, we watched the first episode last night. It's a 10 episode season, all on Netflix. It's a high school, it's election Ryan Murphy style without the involvement, it seems, of teachers. And it's, you know, kids competing against each other in the student, trying to be the student council president, mean girls, mean boys, lots of sex and drugs and secrets and lies and silliness and super rich people. It's not that great. It's been getting not great reviews, and I can see why. I don't know how, I'll tell you that out first hour long episode, boy, it felt like an hour. It felt like 2 hours. It felt like a film. Actually, at the halfway through it, my wife said, is this a movie or is this a series? And I said, oh, that's not a good thing to say, honey. And she said, yeah, this kind of feels like it's going to be, it's long. I was like, it's been on for a half an hour. It churns through plot. This is kind of the opposite of American Horror Story, where I felt like it's not taking it seriously. He's found that silly vibe that goes along with just watching the show and, oh gosh, what happened to that? Ha ha ha. This really attempts certain leaps of emotion that I was just not prepared for, and I couldn't tell whether it was serious or not. The tone is strange. But Ryan Murphy is so talented. And he is so great at casting that after watching it for an hour, I literally just want to check in with those people again because they're so unique and strange. And I'm like, what was the deal with that person? And then you want to see more of them. That guy is really, man, really, I have to say, what a gift to the world, Ryan Murphy. I don't like all his stuff. But he's done some crazy, great, interesting thing. Going back years, right? Years he's been working. You think OJ show? I mean, he's done a lot of great stuff. So I probably will give this another shot. And if my wife gives up on it, I'll probably end up watching it at night. Because I just love the worlds that Ryan Murphy creates. And they're strange and wonderful and flamboyant. And always keep you guessing and interesting. And stupidly dramatic. but I just didn't know if this one got me, you know? Cause when he can, when I'm in the vibe with him, I'm like, dude, you're amazing. And that's how I felt last year about American Horror Story Apocalypse, which I want to watch again because I thought it was so outrageous. All right, that's it. I think that's all I got. This was a fun one. Haven't done this in a while. Just sat down and yapped for an hour. Hey, I want to thank everyone on the Facebook. And I want to thank all the patrons. I don't do it enough. You all are amazing. Been doing the show about a year. I did a patron year special a couple weeks ago. And I want to thank everyone who's been listening. I'm going to try to do these at least once a month where I just sit down and yap. And so I got mine in for September on the last day of September. It's been a good month. Kid getting back to school, watching a lot of TV, building Gundam, getting into football. Finished Veronica Mars. Got one more episode that we're going to do of Veronica Mars. Ken, Sean, and I are going to kind of do a series review, just have a fun chat for an hour this Sunday. I'll release that next week. I'll be releasing Mindhunter as well. Heath Solo and I got a couple episodes in the can that I'm going to release. This week, I'm talking to Craig and Scott. It's Star Wars week, baby. Yeah, Triple Force Friday. We're giving out a Darth Vader tie. Give us a review. Give us a review, and we'll be giving out a Darth Vader tie from cufflinks.com. Watchmen is coming up. Tomorrow, I'm recording the first Watchmen episode with A. Hustler. That's going to be awesome. I checked on iTunes. A million people already have Watchmen podcasts. Whatever. We're still going to be the best. You know, I saw Bald Move killed their leftovers feed. They just made their leftovers feed their Watchmen feed. That was an interesting move. Did they do that on purpose? I was like, what is it? I was like, all these people. I was like, of course, Bald Move's jumping on this. They love Damon too. But then they just put it on their leftover feed. But then that eliminates their leftover feed. If people search it, they're not going to find it. I'm not going to do that. We're starting a new feed, and it's going to be on this feed, too. That's Aaron and I covering Watchmen. Heath and I are going to be covering The Mandalorian. We're going to have special guests for that, too. Talk about Star Wars. Be back to cover The Bachelor with Sarah. That was so much fun. Got to find something to podcast with Jenny. Gina, too. I was trying to figure out something. DJ Tim Hines has another week. Man, we're rocking it out. Go over and join the Facebook page. Talk to all of those peeps over there. Thanks to the patrons. Thanks for everybody who's listening. It's been a great year. Thanks to Cufflinks. We're coming on a year of Cufflinks in November is when Cufflinks came on. So we've knocked it out, and I couldn't have done it without all of you. I'm going to check in. I've got some more. There's not too many shows debuting this week. I will probably, you know, at the end of the month, the end of October, the middle or so, I'll check back in on cable and stuff that's come out. We'll do a kind of overview of everything that's come out. Give a quick shout. If anyone saw, I wanted to wait to do my review until I heard feedback. In the Shadow of the Moon on Netflix. Kind of fun sci-fi. If you watch it, send me an email. I want to hear from some people about that. Come on, Brett, James, Andy, Jenny. You guys watch that. Watch some sci-fi stuff. Tell me what you think about that. What was another thing? Oh, Single Parents is back. Still like that show. The only holdover from last year. Single Parents. And I've been watching Cougar Town. John inspired me to watch Cougar Town. Well, he said, you know, he's been watching some sitcoms. I said, that's a good thing you watch a sitcom. So Cougar Town is back. Cougar Town is back after years of being off the air. No, it's not. It's on Hulu. And I've been enjoying it. Pretty good. Good Place is back too, but I'm not watching it yet because I committed myself to rewatching the entire last season just to get myself back into The Good Place since it's the final season. Well, that is all I've got. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Peace out.